This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about AI and language. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. There are about 7,000 languages around the world, and they do more than help people communicate. Languages are a huge part of a group's identity. They are the string that holds together history, culture, and heritage. But today, nearly half of the world's languages are endangered and expected to go extinct by the end of the century. Native speakers are dying out, and indigenous communities are still dealing with the aftermath of political persecution, centuries of being forced by governments to abandon their language. AI could be an important tool in preserving these languages, but there are some barriers that can get in the way. Nicole Curry has more.
When Jared Coleman was in college, he heard his great-great-great-grandfather's voice.
And it was an amazing experience.
Jared is a member of the Big Pine Paiute tribe of the Owens Valley in California. The recording had been passed down through generations, and it's part of a large language archive in Bishop, California. Jared's distant ancestor is speaking their native language, Paiute.
And the first time I listened to it, I had no idea what he was saying. Growing up, you know, everyone knows some words. You know, like the word for water, the word for sit, you know, just here and there some random words. But I didn't speak the language at all.
Stumbling upon this recording was a pathway to learning the language. Jared started going through this archive, listening to the recordings of elders, interviews conducted by researchers and linguists. He even found a dictionary. So he decided to learn Paiute using those resources. Jared is a computer scientist, so he also wondered if he could utilize those skills to make this process more accessible to others, kind of like Duolingo. He first built an online dictionary.
But it was really with the kind of explosion of ChatGPT and large language models that for the first time I saw an opportunity to do research in this area, and I saw the potential to use AI for endangered language revitalization.
Big tech companies like Google and OpenAI have begun using machine learning to revitalize endangered languages, hoping to save them from extinction. Essentially, machine learning models would be trained on examples from the internet, but this became an issue for Jared. Even though Jared's tribe had this archive of recordings, Paiute is considered a low-resource language. It's just not enough.
So, for example, Google Translate has used a machine learning model for a while now to do translation. And the way that it works is it's trained on like millions and millions and millions of sentences until it learns how to translate. You can't do that for endangered languages. We just don't have that many sentences.
This is an obstacle for many indigenous languages. So Jared tried to work around this for Paiute.
Maybe we don't give it a bunch of examples and train it like a traditional AI approach, but we give it rules about the language. We give it a vocabulary. And then using those rules, because ChatGPT is pretty smart, right? It can figure out how to construct the sentences that we want to construct. And then we'll see how you do. So I taught it. I said, this is the word for water. This is the word for drink. This is how you say, I drink water. And then this is how you say he. Now, how would you say he will drink water? You know what I mean? So like, I'm testing it. I'm not giving it the answer, but I'm giving it enough information to where a human would be able to figure this out.
The tool is called a large language model assisted rule-based translation. Advanced speakers and teachers of the language work with the tool as Jared described. And because of this unique process, there is another advantage of it. It doesn't spit out wrong translations when it doesn't know the answer, unlike other chatbots.
Like when you're talking with ChatGPT, you should never, ever assume that it's accurate. because it just makes stuff up all the time. ChatGPT can be creative and fun. And so you can never kind of separate when it's being creative and making things up.
Jared says the system knows its limitations. For example, if I ask, how do I say I'm going to eat bread and drink water in Paiute?
Like our translation system will basically say, well, I don't know how to say that, right? Because I only know how to translate very simple sentences. But what I can do is tell you how to say, I will eat bread, I will drink water.
Jared says his model is still in the beginning stages, but he hopes the tool can offer accurate translations and help new generations to learn and speak their native language. Across the world in New Zealand, the Māori, another indigenous group, ran into a different issue while using AI to revitalize their language. The Māori language, which is called Te Reo, started to decline in the 1800s.
Māori language declined as a result of the increase of the European population in New Zealand. And alongside that, there was intense linguistic discrimination.
That's Peter Lucas Jones. He's Māori, and he's referring to the Native Schools Act of 1867.
Which barred the speaking of Māori in schools as part of the white assimilation process. This meant that children that did attempt to speak the language at school were beaten.
It wasn't until the 1980s that the Māori Language Act established Te Reo as an official language in New Zealand, along with English. This was an effort to persuade communities to speak their native tongue. But by then, there were far fewer people who could speak the language fluently. Peter Lucas is the CEO of a broadcast company called Te Hiku that's been assembling an archive of recorded speakers for 3 decades.
And so we had been, for 30 years, running tribal radio, running broadcasting infrastructure for radio, television, and our analog type content creation. But what we quickly learned was digitizing our language was not only a priority for archival purposes, it was a priority to ensure that our language had a place in the digital future of the world, keeping in mind that our language is counted amongst the endangered languages.
Te Hiku eventually decided to build a speech-to-text model based on this archive, but it turned out to be an intricate process. For example, sometimes the pronunciation of a word can change the meaning, which can lead to a wrong translation. The phonetic spelling and pronunciation of different words impacted the model's accuracy, so they needed to benchmark the program, correct it word for word.
And that's what we did. We taught our own people how to tag and label phonetical data, how to tag and label language data, in a way that took into account the context, the cultural context.
Peter Lucas stresses that accuracy is crucial when it comes to translation.
Yesterday, I wrote something in Māori into a big tech translation tool. And I wrote, Tā ne mā, wāhi ne mā, puritia te whenua. What I wrote in Māori was, men and women, hold on to the land. It provided me with an English translation, and that English translation was, white man, white woman, keep the land. So what I'm saying is, it's important that as Indigenous people, we actually set the benchmark around what the quality is for translation, what the quality is for pronunciation, what the quality is for accuracy and precision. Because otherwise what we do is we actually exclude it in developing what is a result from big tech leading for us.
Peter Lucas says their speech-to-text model has reached 92% accuracy, outperforming similar attempts by major tech companies. They also launched an app that improves users' pronunciation of Te Reo. Aside from building accurate tools for their communities, Indigenous groups stress the importance of owning the data that they collect and use. Peter Lucas says it's sort of like controlling your own destiny. Lots of Indigenous groups were marginalized for years and stripped of their culture. And even some of the early language preservation projects kept archives locked up in universities, far away from the people it could benefit. So creating these useful resources and owning them dictates exactly how they will be used in the future.
Our tools are only to be used for good. And we want to ensure that the tools that we create enhance the lives of the people that are members of our communities and do no harm. That is why it's important to own the data.
That story was reported by Nicole Currie.